I can tell you, aid to the freedom fighters must and will continue. The American people want it, justice demands it, and it's the only way to make the Marxist-Leninists in Managua sincerely talk peace. In the months ahead, as the Central American peace progress or process undergoes its inevitable complications, it'll be even more vital to keep the central issue before the American people: democracy in Nicaragua. We can accept nothing less. Only with freedom and democracy in Nicaragua will there be true peace and a chance for real, lasting economic development in Central America. Anything short of true democracy in Nicaragua will at best bring only a false peace to Central America. The wound will fester and the infection will break out once again. Remember back when they were trying to tell us in certain areas of the media that Castro was the George Washington of Cuba? There's only one fair path to peace: free and fair elections open to all. Now, the Sandinistas have promised to end all censorship. Well, that's a good beginning. We must hold them to it. But it's only a beginning. The next steps are obvious. Open up the jails and let the thousands of political prisoners free. Let the exiles come home. Allow freedom of worship, free labor unions, a free economy. Dissolve the so-called neighborhood watch committees and give the people of Nicaragua back their basic human rights. And last but not least, send the Soviets and the Cubans home. Anyone who demands anything less of the Sandinistas, anyone who does not insist on true democracy in Nicaragua, is not serving the cause of peace. We'll not be satisfied with mere show, with Potemkin reforms. Until these conditions are met, democratization will be no more than a fraud. And until they're met, we'll press for true democracy by supporting those who are fighting for it. I've talked long enough, but I'd like to leave you with... I'd like to leave you with one thought. In this bicentennial year, I keep being drawn back to George Washington's first inaugural address. He said, "There is no truth more thoroughly established than that there exists in the economy and course of nature an indissoluble union between virtue and happiness. America will prosper, America will succeed," he was saying, "only so long as she is good. For the propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained." He reminded his countrymen that there is something more at stake here than our own advantage, and that something is the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty, which he said was deeply, finally staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people. Well, these words ring just as urgently true today, perhaps even more so. And it's individuals and groups like yours who have responded to that sense of urgency, who've taken up Washington's call, who will keep America good and therefore prospering, working from the grassroots through all the branches of government, It is people like you who are keeping that sacred fire of liberty alive. I've said many times before and will repeat again before I leave here. You may call it mysticism if you will, but I have always believed there had to be some divine plan that put these great continents here in the Western Hemisphere between the two great oceans to be found by people who had such a love of freedom and a desire for that kind of freedom in their hearts that they would uproot themselves from their homelands and from every part of the world come here to create this country. And the other day I received a letter, a line in it so eloquent, from a man that I have to quote it. He said, "You can go to live in France, but you cannot become a Frenchman. You can go to live in Japan, you cannot become Japanese. In Turkey or Greece or any place else, you cannot become one of them. But everybody or anybody from every corner of this world can come to the United States and become an American." I thank you all, and I God bless you all, and I ask his blessing on it all to you. And then I'm just going to leave you with one little thing about some of those other parts of the world. I have become a collector of stories that are told among the people of the Soviet Union that reveal that they have a sense of humor, but also some cynicism about their present system. And I've collected quite a number of them, and they're just wonderful. And one that I think is kind of interesting is the question that was asked in school over there about how do you tell a communist? I said, well, it's someone who reads Marx and Lenin. And how do you tell an anti-communist? And it's someone who understands Marx and Lenin.
Thank you all. Thank you very much.
So President Reagan, addressing a most appreciative group, the annual meeting of the Concerned Women for America, who've come to town, among other things, to support much of the Reagan agenda, the elevation to the Supreme Court of Judge Bork, and President Reagan's desires to keep the freedom fighters armed and fed in Central America and Nicaragua.